Egunon, sail ofizialeko Eban Udurme filmaren prentzaurrekoa egingo dugu orain. Buenas.
Good afternoon. Let's commence the press conference of the official section Eva Doesn't Sleep, and we've got the director Pablo Agüero, the actors and actress Imanol Arias, Daniel Faleón and Sofía Gambrito, and the producer Mariela Zlujewski, Jacques Mulowski and Marianne de Molin. Jacques Bidou and Marianne de Molin, the producers. So they're eagerly awaiting your first question. Please, in the first row, microphone, please.
Y tomo turno de preguntas.
And I'll take turns. Hi, good morning. Two questions for Pablo. The first is the structure of the film. Quite theatrical, the way it was done. Did you always, was that very clear in your mind from the outset? And the second, which draws my attention, is the sound. All of the sound details are quite marked, or quite clearly marked. A cigarette, the steps, when they walked, or when they take their gloves off, you could hear it very clearly. How did you deal with the sound side of things? Thank you. The structure has to do with several choices that stem, that go from the ethical to the aesthetical. On the one hand, the tried is to not to make a detailed painting of the whole story, which would be too difficult for the audience. We have to leave part of the real story, which is, you can't believe, you could probably not even believe, it'd be too sordid as well, and would, I didn't want to demonstrate it, so therefore the narration was quite elliptical. There's a big 25 years, I just wanted to concentrate on three moments, and that's how I aesthetically selected, which has to do with the content matter of the film. It also had to do with the way we shot, of making the film a large film in its ambitions, and in its narrative and the casting, with a small budget, and to film in 20 days. So therefore, the strategy was to achieve artistic power and narrative power to the maximum, concentrated with very few means. That was the idea of constructing all of the... The most difficult time is to move crew and cast. I wanted everyone in the same place and to put it on the screen, and I want to have them together. That's where we worked in with continuous sequence. Every day it was a new sequence, and we risked ourselves, and it was a choreography that would last 10, 15, 20 minutes, and where everything came out perfectly. That creates an enormous amount of tension, a way of working with the actors and with the technical crew to find that magic that happens in real time. I wanted that feeling of when a magician, he says, I've got nothing in here in my, up my sleeves, like a magician. He says, that's what, we're not manufacturing, we're living, those 15 minutes exist in real time, the full scene. So therefore, that was from the beginning of the ethical to the aesthetic. That's where it took us. It was something that we concentrated in three strong, powerful moments with very few different scenes, in maximum intensity, in small amount of time and a small amount of space. Sound, yes, the second voice. Well, films are marvelous. Cinema is marvelous. Every time I make a film, it's a unique opportunity. Well, I wouldn't say it's a luxury because it's arduous work, but to have all of those means at your disposal, I tried to squeeze the maximum out of them. And the sound was the only moment where you can add layers to ad infinitum, almost. Not like an image on an image on an image on an image, but I can use layers of sound. So therefore, I construct it in a very complex way, merging the music and the sound editing simultaneously. And therefore, I can work in the engine of the motor has been mixed with the roar of a tiger. It's subliminal, relatively subliminal, that is to say. You're putting it in front with a very explicit message, and we're working semi-consciously. So therefore, the sound is very expressive, the whole film, and with many layers of to read it. For example, we have worked with a sampler of Evita's voice. Evita's voice inundates the entire film. We've lasted for a minute, one of her phases. It's like wind. Evita's screaming is always sort of sewing out, includes her presence throughout. It was experimental work, really, that we've carried out with the sound. Sorry if I've answered with a... my answer was a bit long. But I'd like to know whether you saw the Tristan Bauer's documentary on the one hand, and on the other hand, what were the sources that you used to make the script? Yes, I saw the documentary. I thought it was very good. It was the only work that I'd seen that showed the entire history. Not even books, but he reconstituted everything. After the documentary, we continued to discover things about what had happened, the facts, and it changes. I worked for 5 or 6 years investigating and researching where all of the information was quite relative, I saw, and everyone gives a certain version. I think there are 4 or 5 colonels that claim the fact that they hid Evita, and some have written a personal diary, and I've read them all, but obviously they're all lying, and that's what gives me the margin to construct my fiction film. And what are the sources, books, documentaries, or what? I've got a library at home which is ever doesn't sleep. It's a whole library, a whole shelf full of bibliography. I could give you a bibliography. There's a lot of material, enormous amount of material, all quite relative, because Peronism is divided, and because they're condemned. Some people, there's Peronist and anti-Peronist propaganda, so it's very difficult to find the true information. Right at the back there, please. Hi, good afternoon. I like the film because it mixes aesthetics with history, with the direct images. I'm not too sure. The truth is an experiment which, for some people, it would have been a bit tough, but I loved it, and that's what I wanted to tell you. Whether you used different types of art, that is to say, what type of aesthetic narrative that you've had, I liked it very much, and I would like to say I agree with Pilat Pulthano, like all women. Thank you, I'm very, thank you, and a huge hug for me. Hi, good morning. I would like to ask the director about Evita nowadays, how the Argentinians of your age, that is a, when in your environment, you say, I'm going to make a film about Evita, and to a certain extent, with this film, with these brushstrokes, explains many tragedies of Argentina. And I would like Imanol to say, well, where does this character stem from, whether it's imagined, or could you tell us a bit about the embalmer? Evita nowadays continues to be the political figure which is still very present in Argentina 70 years after her death. That persistent is what the film, a person turns into a myth after she dies, and she's still a political figure, and she's still very powerful. The relationship with my generation is quite particular. In Argentina, thousands of films were made upon the dictatorship that starts in 1976, and very little was talked about what happened before, how all half a century of dictatorships and repression that bring about that climax, which was when I was born, my generation, 1976, 1977. I wanted to tell what happened before, since the Second World War is finished, World War II, and then the Peronist start and Peronism, all of that moment of repression, the bombing of the country, there were people disappeared, massacres, Evita's body disappeared. The idea is the struggle between a protectionist state model and a neoliberal model, and the position of the neoliberal state is done through a war inserted in the Cold War, which ends in 1976. I wanted to tell that part of the story that we've never, our generation has never got involved in learning. My generation, our relationship with Evita, it's difficult. I was afraid. I said, none of good directors in Argentina would do something like that because it's bad taste. Bad directors have that, but the good directors would never address an issue which is almost challenging good taste, and to talk about the history of a very renowned figure, but at the same time, but it's a character that's the voice of Evita. Before understanding politics, what made me cry was Evita's voice. She's got a broken voice. She's a bit like Janis Joplin, but but from the tragic side of the voice and social side of Janis Joplin, that you can, you, that that emotionally hits you. So therefore, I think that's what most of my generation understand about that time. Hi, good morning. Pedro Ara, he's from Aragon, who was born at the beginning of the 19th century. He is a doctorate in the University of Zaragoza and in the Germany of the pre-First World War, recomposing cadavers of military people that were destroyed to hand them in over to the families. There he carries out a technique that has to do with the reconstruction and the plastification of the cadavers, the dead bodies. And then he's called up by the Soviet Union to embalm Lenin. He denies, he doesn't want to do it, he don't want to embalm someone who has got with an ideology, and a student of his does it. He goes to Argentina, to the University of Córdoba, in a place where there already existed a certain fashion of recomposing the dead bodies to expatriate them to Spain of the very important and well-known families. He carries out a lot of teaching, and he embalms the hands of Falla, the composer. And I've seen them, and it's quite perturbing and disturbing because they're alive, and it seems as if they're going to play the piano. According to his own book, he says, a book which is published in Spanish and in German, I finally found it in Montevideo, which I think is the last big library in the world, where the only place where you can see it. So I got a book that I bought, which had been used, and in very much where he details the entire process. He, according to what Pedro Ara says, he's a conservator, a monarchy, he detests masses, he feels very disturbed, and he hates poor people that he sees in Buenos Aires, and he has a vision of the figure of Perón, of almost a war. He is called up by an ex-student of his and a minister with Perón so that he can embalm the Perón that he never wanted, that he wanted to do, but Perón never, he announced it, and he created a commission to embalm the body. He denies doing it, but he accepts going to meeting her. He says he meets her on a day where Perón has to talk on the balcony, the famous day in which a speech where Eva talks, sustained by the general. He says that he finds a woman who's 32 pulse of 32 per minute, and then a blood pressure of 4.2. She can hardly talk. A woman who had been bleeding continuously because she had a problem in her uterus, in her womb, and he explains that he doesn't want to do the work, but at that time, according to what he says, Eva Perón listens to the general say something that wasn't foreseen. The general had to say that she was going to be in the presidential election, and with that low blood pressure, she gets up and she goes out into the balcony. In the photo of the balcony, I think Pedro Ara is on the fourth on the right, and this man says that she's a woman that turns up to 190 heartbeats per minute, and with a small microphone, she can communicate, excite people, and move 2 million people. And so therefore he understands that there's something from the medical standpoint which is interesting in that work. Pedro Ara commits himself to work with her, exercising a paraffination sort of, using paraffin, because the cadaver of Eva Perón has no scratches on it, no body parts were touched, she's got them all, and the photos in the book, these photos exist, and the few people that have seen it said it's a feeling of freshness on the, it's as if it was alive in the skin when she relaxed. And he spends 3 years, in which he wants to hand over the cadaver, preparing that body, a bit of time to present it before those millions of people that went to see her, and then another 3 years that he worked upon it. So therefore the feeling that I had was that this man turns into the last defender of the rest of Eva Perón. And from my point of view, is one of those characters in her history that in a very popular sort of way, with a language which is very simple, he manages to unmask the great lie that we lived years, centuries ago. He unmasks power. He unmasks it to such an extent, and it makes the less cultured, the simplest masses of people, that power can't put up with it. So therefore, not only that he has to kill it, but he has to make disappear, the body disappear, and has to make it disappear from history. And from my point of view, the Pedro Arda's medical perfection makes it impossible for it to make the body disappear. So those the character is, from Rockefeller, very disturbing to all of the heads of state that have invaded us in this great lie and in this great process. He has a capacity almost of, or the ability of, I don't know how to call it, a special ability of transmuting the lie and reality, transmute it into something that makes human beings, the simplest human beings, so that they feel alive and not asleep in the middle of end of injustice and the terror of war and stupidity. Yes, here in the back. Hi, a question for the director. In the film, the character of Evita is seen as a myth vis-a-vis, that it wasn't a chosen, it's an elected politician vis-a-vis the other politician. And when the dead body appears, it's whether that's a reconciliation for Argentina. That's my question. No, the truth is, specifically in the history of Argentina, was a recovery. It was a false reconciliation. It was propaganda when the body came back. And the real story is something that's so crazy that I left out of the film. The guerrillas that had killed Aramburu, the terrorist, when Perón comes back to power, elected democratically, and he dies, and his new wife inherits power, and she moves to the right and towards liberalism. To have political legitimacy, they steal Aramburu's body so that they can claim Evita's body coming back to Argentina. So therefore, Evita's body is brought by Isabel Perón's government, which is politically contrary to Evita. Evita, she talked about wealth, and she was Isabel Perón uses as propaganda to claim that she is the heir of Evita. You can't see it in the film. You just see a president of the nation who goes to receive publicly, vis-a-vis the press, a dead body. And she pays a tribute to it. That's never been seen in the history. This has never been seen before. I found that everyone wanted to forget about it, but so therefore it was a political recovery, which was quite delirious, and they installed it in the presidential palace. They took her and they constructed it, and she lived there as if she was the president. This is a political recovery, and at that time the military are around Isabel, the same that are going to carry out the military coup, and they're the one that's going to bury her. So therefore it's interesting to see how capitalism recovers the revolutionary icons, like with what happened with Che Guevara, for example, that were used by capitalism later. Isabel uses the image physically. Isabel tries to seem like Eva. She does her hair the same, but with the aesthetics of 1980s, like a brushing in her hair. She looks like an extraterrestrial. The invasion, what was it? Mars Attack, I think, or what was the film? Yeah, Mars Attacks, that film. Or the TV series V. Congratulations for the film. I thought it was very good and very deep also. I found a phrase that I thought was great, which summarizes a lot of what happened to us and continues to happen to us. When Aramburu tells the guerrilla, Montonera, she tells you what's going to happen to him, and the girl says, those are ideas, and he says, which I thought was great, they're not ideas, they're techniques. Where does that phrase come from, that dialogue? Which is great, it's fantastic. It came out in the rehearsals, I think, if I'm not mistaken. We rehearsed with Daniel and Sofia and with the Montoneros, and during the rehearsals we discussed a lot about, we wanted the film to connect to nowadays, and there are anachronic links to it, basically. So therefore we demonstrated to Aramburu like a prophet, that is, he's a war criminal in a certain sense, but he's nothing in comparison to the people that were going to come later. They were going to be monstrous. It was almost Christ-like and prophetic, like a prophet when he talks. Sorry, we can't hear what you're saying from the audience. I don't know. But I think that rehearsing and discussing it and going in depth what we wanted to say, probably it was Daniel It emerges when we started to talk about Aramburu and the militaries. That's a historical passage, because the military that were trained by the French who acted in Algeria are the ones that came along with the entire process. That's to say, we also played, it's a bit anachronic, I don't know whether Aramburu's generation was more linked to the Department of State in the United States with Alliance for Progress. The military that come later, there's a documentary, if I recall, a French documentary, where it achieves testimonies of some of those military men who participated in the last dictatorship, where they confess the truth that they did train the military men who gave the military coup of 1976. We wanted to demonstrate that Aramburu is like a godfather, the old godfather and the new godfather. Well, one, they're both murderers, but one has certain ideas. Those that come along, I haven't got ideas, they've got techniques, they've got power, and they come along to kill us. That's what's called postmodernism. Now, that discussion, that phrase emerged, which is as cold as possible, that we used for the end of the film. Hi, I would like to ask you about the photography in the film. I think it starts with light and it finishes with light. And at what moment you decided that the photography was going to be dramatically important and narratively and expressively important? Well, I said each aspect in cinema, as I said a moment, in filmmaking, is something marvelous that you can exploit. It's like being a musician or a painter or a contemporary musician, or to be a photographer or being an actor, and perhaps a cinema director, for example, a filmmaker. I tried everything, and I knew that I was never going to choose excellence. I said I was not going to be, I thought in the film, the photography, I think that in filmmaking there's an absence of light and darkness. There aren't chiaroscuros, that is, light and dark. Each film's signature and author films, commercial films, are all illuminated. Too much light, and as it's too much light, there's no presence of darkness and light. And that's a personal interest that I have. And it's almost ideological. When you don't have light and darkness, you don't have black and white, or it's, everything is quite clear, everything's defined, you've got nothing to try to find out what's going on and use your eyesight. And that is to say, aesthetically, you've got to see that the audience can look and discover something else on the screen that is manifested by light, and that metamorphosis that takes with the images. There are many, many special effects that are almost handmade, and that the image is almost moving, dust suspended in the air until you heat the air, so that the image is a little blurred, and then lighting things up with fire, and then there's water falling on the walls in the background. The image is never something fine, defined, like history is not defined, and it's definitive either. Hi. Two questions. One for Emmanuel, surprised by how much knowledge you have upon embalming techniques. Did you study it, or was it something that you were interested in the past, and whether throughout the film you learned something that you wanted to tell us about that? And then the surprise also, and how did you manage, Pablo, to get this Denis Lavant to work with you? Well, I didn't go to school, basically. I'm from an Eibar. I'm an actor since I was a kid. I've got that talent, shall we say. So all of my knowledge, I've learned it through making movies. I made myself a better person. It's turned me into who I am through portraying characters. I received this proposal in a year in which I was able to open up dates of that absurd world that I've been living for 14 years. I'm like Gagari in space, in gravity, with no gravity, without touching Earth, doing a TV series with a lot of words that millions of people can see, but it's just a TV series that, and it's free at home, and you see at home, and tells a story, a sentimental story, history of Spain. So I received this project after doing Anacleto, which is, from my point of view, and with all respect, and I love this film, another moment in my life which has placed me in what I appreciate of this profession that I do. And I decide to take it on immediately when it was given to me, because I'm very close to the production, and for Buenos Aires, which is a city that I feel almost a son of, just like from a son of Eibar or from where I live here. So if I had a problem, I had very little time to do it. I had to open up a week to be able to shoot. And so I got in touch with Pablo, who I had met through Skype. I met him a day before we started shooting, because then we talked about the book, and I spent some time looking for the book, and when I received the book, I received a diary, which opens up a lot of background for the character to do it in a short amount of time. It's a book that's written by the embalmer, which is called Pedro Ara, the embalmer, the case of Eva Perón, and it's very precise and very detailed. It's a book that I found in Montevideo, where all the best books in the world can be found, by the way. And I'm sorry, we can't hear this girl. No, the book, I didn't achieve it in Spain because it's unclassified. The other one's in German, and the only place through the internet and connecting to friends, someone says, I've got a copy, it's a used copy of the first edition, by the way, and it's in Montevideo. So that's why I say you've got to go find books in Montevideo if you can't find them anywhere else. Okay, that's, I'm just saying that it's great for literature, that city. That's where I discovered the entire process, which is very detailed. What did I learn in this film? Well, my learning process was very powerful in the film. First of all, because my I didn't land in the, like Agari, not in the Baltic Sea, but I landed in the Gobi Desert. I had arrived on a Sunday. Until Friday, I was doing my TV series, Cuéntame. I arrived on Sunday morning. I met Pablo. We talked, and on Monday morning, all of a sudden, I was in an empty space, an enormous empty space, 10 times this room, where they constructed all of the little flowers on a daily basis, and then the candles with the proposal that Pablo said was a 12-minute scene non-stop, and we rehearsed all morning, and we had lunch, and we had three takes, time that they do three takes in the afternoon. So this story, at least my part, I did it in 15 takes, 15 scenes. When you come from a non-gravity situation to a gravity situation, you land with a bang. So therefore, first of all, with the approximation to the character, and then the characteristics of Pablo, that he told me that he wanted unpossessed, and this is what he said to me, don't dare to use any of my techniques that have made me popular on TV, because I was going to feel ridiculous in the film. And I'm 59 years old, and he's about 17, this little boy. And so I said, well, there was a lot of tension on the first day, and plus the character speaks Spanish, but then after a little time in Argentina, there are words that change, ubicar, agarrar, and different words, and he changed them. And he changed the text a little bit more so that that presence was alive, to not lose my accent. But if we worked, you know, on the accent that Ara had, which were words that were Latin American but with a Spanish accent. So I spent the first day, an enormous amount of tension. It's very difficult. One has 2 or 3 days in a film, but if you've got 5 days to shoot, so jet lag and everything. So I started to work with a lot of difficulty in Pablo. I was telling me that, hey, relax, because you're very tense. But I think that was good that I was tense, and that rigidity and strictness. And he said, don't do that. He knew that it was going to provoke, that I was going to be even more tense and more rigid. And when I helped him, I said, what can I do? What can I do? He said, shut up. And all of a sudden I understood that I speak too much and my disease is getting worse. And that silence that he asked me on the third day, for example, of the shoot, my friend came up to me and said, Now you've lost all the tension, you've gotten rid of it, now you're doing things right. And that's what I learned. Instead of saying, well, okay, I'm in the film now, I calculated like a comedian. I said, 5 days I've lost two, and I started to feel sick. A doctor came along, and I haven't got high blood pressure, and I had 27-14. I was almost near a heart attack. I started to vomit on every day and every night. So therefore, half of the third day and the fifth day was shot with four buckets, and we rehearsed, and I vomited all the water that I drank. But I never vomited on the scene. I never stopped any scene. Yes. When you pull out, yes, of the 15 times, there was one time that I messed up. So I ended up, the tension didn't, my blood pressure didn't go down, not taking any drugs. I traveled like that. I came to Spain, and I spent 7 days in 6 days in a clinic to compensate my high blood pressure, of which I'm perfectly healed now. And so therefore I learned the incarnation of characters from the body itself. I'm an actor, a natural method actor, and I think I'd forgotten for a long, long time the instrument for TV efficiency, which is much more false. And all of a sudden I found a reality which I thank very much to be participated. I thank very much the book that came from Uruguay, and I thank that coming back for falling back on Earth once again makes me think that I don't want to go into space anymore and want to stay here with my tension and with my learning process as an actor. It was a gift that's been given to me. Silence now. Thank you very much.
Denis.
With this film, as it had a co-production of French, he was saying to us every day, we presented the script in France where they choose the best script of the year, and the film won it. It was a foreign film, we were surprised, and part of that award was an adaptation for French radio. And as I didn't like the actors on the radio, I just listened to Jean Moreau reading Buñuel, and I said, I want to adapt it if Jean Moreau reads it. It's like a beautiful experience. Jean Moreau read the whole script in front of 900 people in a festival, but he read it on his own. And some parts, they made mistakes. So therefore, I needed another actor. Who could it be? And my other dream was Denis. So therefore, I asked for Denis, and Denis turned up, and he recorded the documentary side. He recorded it. And then for the film, I thought more Mads Mikkelsen, for example, who had impressed me in several films. And then there's a film that had been in the Cannes Film Festival. Mads Mikkelsen and Denis were front, have a monologue. What's it called? What was it?
Michael Collas.
Okay. And I said, wow, I've got Denis next to me, who's a monster. He's great. And he's eating Mads Mikkelsen. And I wanted to choose Mads Mikkelsen. I left the film and I said, I want Denis. I want Denis Lamont to do the character, as if I'd forgotten to have the great actor. And the films I've seen of his are impressive. I hadn't seen the last one, which is also incredible, where he plays 12 characters. So therefore, it was very close in my mind, shall we say, when I proposed it. It was a challenge because he's got a very heavy calendar. He not only makes movies, but he also, or films, but he's on stage in the theater. He's doing Othello, and the next day he'll do a monologue of Celine, jumping on stage, and monologues, long monologues. He doesn't speak Spanish. He had to learn everything by phonetics. I was in Argentina. We sent recordings. So it was an enormous challenge. But like Emmanuel says,
es la persona que hizo
he's the person that made the film not only be okay, that kind of character that makes it overflowing and turns into something else. He can be very professional, but he's like an overwhelming animal that he appears at the right moment. We didn't really need that for the entire film, but there's a moment in the film that according to the laws of drama, it's got at the end of the second third of the second third part of the film, and it's got to overwhelm, and that's what Denis did. Hi. To continue with the actors, Gael García Bernal, I thought it was incredible, those close-ups, and those were fantastic, and the way he looks, and his eyes were very intense and quite surprising at the same time, and almost made me feel quite afraid. I would like to know, how did you manage him to make him look like that with those close-ups that you took? I would like to know how you worked on his eyes. Gael, you've got to say, in that he's quite incredible. You see him, he's a small guy, he's talking to you, and you put a camera on him, and he's got something which comes from him above all. When I see him through the camera, I can't believe it. He's got the sort of magic. You put him in front of a camera and it happens, or he turns it on. This project has spent quite a few years. Every year we got together with Yael and we talked about the character. We wanted a pale vampire and sinister. And at another moment we said, no, he's got to be a dandy who's got a tan and who comes from Miami. And finally we did a mixture. He's almost vampire-like, but he's a dandy character with his cigarette holder and so on, and he was in charge of all of this. He's a guy. It's the most disturbing thing comes from that he's something very good looking, very nice looking, who comes along singing and he's looking at himself in the mirror, and behind he's conscious, he's talking about the worst massacre in the history of Latin America. That monstrosity is at a second level, and that look has to do with that. He's a guy that's smiling, but within him, he's loading up that monstrosity. He's very efficient, Gael, for doing this. He's very professional. And then plus, technically, we're filling him with for the close-ups in a certain way, and his face fitted in. His face will be very big. It will be 3 meters big because of the screen and very big eyes. I imagine the close-up on the screen. I've got 4 questions. No, we don't have time. We don't have time. Just one question. Just one question. Just one question. They're short questions. Why didn't you record the colonel's confessions? Why did you think about other alternatives? You don't kill him. So, like a reconciliation process. And the third question, to show the body of Evita Perón dead, is it to avoid the image of the interpretation of Madonna of Evita Perón? And the fourth, don't you believe that you have had a conflict to avoid the manipulation of the image of Evita? So that it didn't turn into an advertising icon. Thank you. The search between the tone and the historical background, I wrote a version of the script. I had a ton of films. I noticed that it wasn't correct. We studied an enormous amount of versions and structures. We had versions where there was a voice on off of the colonel throughout the film, the entire film, and versions where I wrote the scenes that happened in Italy. It took place in Italy, and I condensed everything, what I thought was essential for me. The truth is, I didn't place myself vis-a-vis the other Evita, which is an opera which is almost half fantasy. Apart from having a character in common, it really has no relationship. I based myself upon history and my position vis-a-vis history and how this is translated narratively and aesthetically. Well, we tried all the different options. I ended up choosing the ones that I thought the most efficient and pertinent. Okay, before finishing, I think it would be very interesting that the producers could tell us a bit, Maria Ganon, and the French, it's a co-production, which is French, Hispanic, Spanish and Argentinian, which is quite complex. Could you tell us about the co-production? Simply be very brief and to say that these types of films, the truth is, are made possible through co-production, where with more or less means and achieving some support and others not achieving. So along with Pablo, it's been quite enriching to work with Pablo because he's a person who has worked and the relationship with the production and direction, so therefore at a given moment the film was going to have a certain amount of means behind it. We didn't achieve them. Pablo always adapted it himself to the needs, the possibilities that we producers were achieving, so therefore the work was quite interesting and quite rich in that respect. And I think that films that have this potential, artistic potential, but in time, in turn of content matter, is very, very important that they be made, and therefore the co-production instruments have to be very flexible, and we have to find formulas between the different countries which will enable us to give more, especially from Spain, to experiences such as this, which talk about the history of a character in Argentina in this case, but I mean it transcends borders and it talks about something which is more global and which affects us all as human beings. One word, I'm going to try to speak in Spanish, okay, but very bad. Just to say, we have produced with Marianne in the first film of Pablo Salamandra, who was in Cannes in 2008. It's a film which was very powerful, and since 2008 we worked with Evita, 7 years work, and work for Pablo, which was very difficult in terms of script, and it was fantastic work. 7 years to try to construct a production vis-a-vis this story, and it'd be a long story. It's a long story, but we've got not enough time now. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yes, we do. Okay, I would just like to say that without France and the ministry, a fund of the ministry for the foreign ministry of the exterior, with Antinka, for example, in Argentina, the film would have been impossible to be made. So therefore, these are the two pillars that we constructed, and then the production. It took us 7 years for a film that for us was very powerful, very powerful. Eva doesn't sleep without money. We can practically say without money. The budget of this film is terrible. It's terrible. 800,000. Just under a million. Can you imagine for this film, and with so many years' work, but the film's here, and it's very powerful. Thank you very much, Pablo. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.